there.
Veteran Mars explorers take the opportunity to look back this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. The opportunity I have in mind is, or was, a robot. This opportunity was the Mars Exploration Rover that explored Meridiani Planum for an amazing 14 and a half years, and she captured the hearts of millions here on Earth. Planetary Society staff and members recently attended a special screening of Goodnight Oppie, the new and terrific documentary about the plucky rover, her sister on the red planet named Spirit, and the wonderful team that made them such a success. You'll hear Planetary Society CEO Bill Nye, planetary scientists Jim Bell and Bethany Ellman, and some enthusiastic young explorers. Sarah Alamed is moments away from joining me in a tribute to Apollo 17. The last Apollo mission to the moon has just reached its 50th anniversary. We'll close with a visit to ancient Greece, where Planetary Society chief scientist Bruce Betts will reveal the mother of Artemis, sister of Apollo, and namesake for the mission that is headed back from circling the moon as I record this week's show. By the time most of you hear this, the uncrewed Artemis 1 mission's Orion capsule should have splashed down off the coast of my hometown, San Diego. You can read more about Artemis in the December 2nd edition of our free weekly newsletter, The Downlink. We've also got stories about two never-before-seen minerals discovered in a meteorite, and an update on the European Space Agency's ExoMars mission. ESA has announced it will find a way forward with the rover and orbiter after ending collaboration with Russia. Everything is at planetary.org, where you'll also find the winners of our Best of 2022 campaign. You chose them. Now you can see and help us celebrate the year's greatest accomplishments in space. Sarah Alamed is now less than a month from becoming the new host of this show. She is finishing up her work as the Planetary Society's Digital Community Manager. Sarah, welcome back again. As people hear this show, at least as it is published, we are celebrating, maybe lamenting a little bit, the very last of the Apollo missions that made it to the moon and put humans up there on the surface. Apollo 17, as we speak, they were on their way to the moon 50 years ago today.
Yeah, it's weird to really grok the fact that it's been 50 years since humans walked around on the moon. I feel like everybody who's really involved in loving space has thought about, researched these Apollo missions, but when you really put it in that context, I mean, December 7th, 1972 was the last time that we launched an Apollo mission. That's wild.
All right, so first, kudos for perfect use of the word grok, which you don't hear often enough anymore. And second, yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it just seems so cosmically, romantically appropriate that here we have Artemis 1 on its way back from the moon, you know, hopefully headed toward a successful reentry and the next humans who will make that same trip, not to land in 2024, but to go around. I'm really curious talking to you as somebody, I mean, I was around, I was there, I was able to enjoy Apollo 11. You weren't there yet. You weren't here on Earth yet.
Yeah, I wasn't alive yet, which is wild. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you're so steeped in it that it feels so real to you. But it does take on this kind of mythic quality in my mind. When I was a child, my mom would tell the stories about the Apollo landings and watching people on their black and white TV with her family. And, you know, I never got sick of those stories. It always made me really happy and very hopeful. And it does make me feel a lot better knowing that the Artemis program is now in full swing. You know, we went to Kennedy Space Center to go watch what was going to be the first attempt of the first Artemis launch. And it didn't go off as planned, but I remember being there and having that conversation with other people that were all waiting for that launch. And we were all just hoping that Artemis would launch before this anniversary, because it felt like we needed that continuation of lunar exploration to really feel happy about what was going on.
Yeah. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with John Grunsfeld, guy who's been up there five times, though not to the moon. He hoped, but it didn't happen. And he's going to talk about the importance of doing science when humans go back to the moon. I'm sure you've been thinking about this as a scientist yourself. I mean, Harrison Schmitt, the only scientist to walk on the moon.
Right. Isn't that wild? It's really cool that they had a scientist on the moon and very helpful in that particular case because their landing site had such geologic diversity. In the moment, having a scientist, specifically someone with a PhD in geology, be able to look at the rocks on the ground and be like, yes, we need a sample of that one. That's very useful, but very strange in context to think that he was the first one to actually, at first and only one, to ever walk around on the moon. Hopefully, you know, the Artemis program takes this into account and we have a whole new generation of scientists up there on the moon.
And a lot more scientists eagerly waiting for their data right down here on Earth, along with the rest of us fans. Sarah, thank you. Great talking to you once again.
Thanks, Matt.
Here's Planetary Society CEO Bill Nye speaking a few weeks ago, just before the lights dimmed, for a screening of the new documentary, Good Night, Oppie.
These missions were where NASA proved they could do it, or we could do it again. This movie is about missions that changed the world and changed our understanding of Mars. Everybody, also Matt Kaplan's here, the voice of Planetary Radio. He will have Rob Manning on, he's now the chief engineer at JPL, and you'll see Rob Manning quite a bit in this movie. Another thing the Planetary Society did was we have a stick to cast a shadow, and that way you can infer the color of the Martian sky and then get the colors of the camera right. And we were in touch with a guy at University of Washington who's not here, Woody Sullivan, and he said, if you're going to have a stick, it should be a sundial, it should have a motto. And so my predecessor, Lou Friedman, came up with the motto, Two Worlds, One Sun. And it has the optimistic message to the future, which was co-written by us and Steve Squires, who's featured. To those who visit here, we wish a safe journey and the joy of discovery. The J-O-D. And that's all you guys. The joy of discovery. Let's roll that film.
It is a wonderful film produced by some of the best in the business. While it's full of gorgeous images and animation, it's the focus on the team behind the Mars exploration rovers that makes the film so affecting. At least two of those team members were with us for the screening. Here's Bill Nye introducing one of them.
All the pictures on Mars from the panoramic camera were taken by that man right there, Jim Bell, who is a professor at Cornell. Back in the day, he sat in the same office that Carl Sagan sat in the Space Sciences Building.
Jim Bell, let me start with your review of the film.
Oh man, so many memories come flooding back. I look at all the people that I was working with and it's like, they're so young. And there's a couple of pictures of me and there was like, oh my God, I was so young. But it was a young, tight-knit, relatively small group of people who put the rovers together, built them and the instruments and all that. Of course, many thousands and thousands of people around the world to make all the parts and launch them and then operate them and all that. But it was a tight-knit group at JPL and a small number of universities around the world who were doing this. And so it was great to see and relive some of that drama. You know, even though I know exactly what happened and when it happened, I'm still like, oh my gosh, is it going to survive? You know, oh no, a dust storm, you know. And we were thinking all that same kind of stuff day to day. I think the film really captured well the you know, the surprise of the longevity of these amazing robots, and also the relationship that humans made with those machines. Of course, you know, the robots aren't exploring, right? The robots are not exploring Mars. People are exploring using the robots. The robots do what we say. They're only as good as their software, as they say, and their equipment, and people built them. But you just get attached to them. You know, how long will they live? How long will they last? And you just never know. You just come in and enjoy the pictures every day, like we're doing still with Curiosity. More than 10 years on Mars, and Perseverance, year and a half, heading close to 2 years on Mars. It reminds me to count my blessings and be happy that every single day we have a robot on Mars, a spacecraft orbiting the moon, a mission flying to the edge of the solar system and beyond. We're just really lucky. We're really lucky to be able to be living in this amazing time of exploration.
I can't let you go without mentioning that I think you got a best-selling book, a photo album, out of this these missions.
It was the first book that I wrote. It was called Postcards from Mars. And when we were getting these pictures back, and, you know, I think the film captured this as well. It was like a friend is off having this adventure somewhere and sending you pictures back, postcards back through the mail. And that's how we sort of started thinking of these mosaics and panoramas as postcards. And yeah, that got me hooked on writing photo-oriented space books, which I just love to do.
Speaking of those pictures, I kept waiting for, okay, where are the stills? Where are those beautiful images? But they were all over this, actually, right? Because they were the basis of much of the computer-generated imagery that I think we were seeing.
Yeah, the filmmakers did a beautiful job of taking the real pictures and layering 3D over them and driving the rover through them and using computer graphics, you know, to create scenes that we never saw, you know, hovering over the rover while it's driving, looking on the ground, looking back up at the eyes of the rover, looking down, you know. But all the scenery in there is real. You know, it's really, that was the real Mars in there. And so it was emotional for me to see the edge of Victoria Crater, you know, and we really had the rover there, you know, and you realize how dramatic it really was and scary to see it. And I think it brought a lot of those stills to life.
All right, before we finish, you're still busy up there. Perseverance, not just stills, movies. How's it going?
Things are going great with Perseverance. As I mentioned, Curiosity, things are going great. Some incredibly beautiful and amazing landscapes that rover's exploring. And Perseverance, we now have 14 drill samples, core samples, in the body of the rover. We still have 20-something more to go, but we're about to put our first cache of those samples down as kind of a backup in case the mission ends early. They'll be available for the future Mars Sample Return Lander to pick up. And it's just super exciting, Matt, to realize that, you know, within a decade, we could all see those rocks with our own eyes and study them in the laboratory and put them to the real robust test of science. And that's happening right now. It's happening every day, and it's extremely exciting.
Thank you, Jim. Keep taking those great pictures of Mars.
I'll do it, Matt. Thank you. And best of luck to you as well.
Jim Bell of Arizona State University is the principal investigator for the MassCam-Z cameras on Perseverance, the rover that is now collecting samples in Mars's Jezero crater. Here's Bill Nye with another introduction.
If you watch the movie carefully, for just a few moments, you will see our president, Dr. Bethany Ellman, who is a young postdoc. You are postdoc?
Undergraduate. 21.
Bethany, you were there at the start?
I was privileged to be there at the start. I was an undergrad at Washington University, and I got connected through one of my professors, Ray Arvidson, to work on the science teams during the first year of operation of Spirit and Opportunity at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory during my senior year.
That's amazing. Now, when we say at the start, I mean, what portion of the MER mission?
I was able to join actually in 2003 before landing as part of all of the practice ORTS and SORTS operations readiness tests and surface operation readiness tests. Everything in NASA has an acronym. But I got to participate in those practice runs where we were driving a rover around in the desert remotely, practicing the same things that we'd be doing on Mars, planning as a science team, sequencing it, uplinking it, and then watching the rover execute what we did and repeating.
How cool.
Like what we did, like what Opportunity did on Mars for over 5,000 sols.
And you told me before the film started, you were on Mars time. You even had one of those crazy watches that was advancing 40 minutes every day.
That's right. I mean, we were living on Mars time. We were, because these are solar powered rovers, we as a science team were living as a rover on Mars. So the Mars day is 24 hours and basically 40 minutes. So it's great. You go into work at 9 o'clock, then 9:40, then 10:20, but then midnight and 12:40 and 1:20, and it cycles its way through the day. So it sort of messes with the human circadian rhythm as well. So we all had special watches that were weighted and adjusted to keep Mars time. And some of us were also part of an experiment to see how humans did living on this non-Earth timescale. We wore these things called ActiWatches that could sense motion and sense your awakeness and alertness.
This is pre-smartwatch.
This is pre-smartwatch, but we were the human guinea pigs in terms of how it would be to live and work on Mars time. And I have to say, one of the features of having two rovers on Mars that were on opposite sides of the planet is that when you switched from Spirit to Opportunity, it was like taking a plane flight to India, because you were basically 12 hours off.
This was almost 20 years ago now.
Almost.
What did that experience mean to you? I mean, there you were an undergraduate. Now I think it's safe to say a senior member of the solar system exploration community. What did that early experience mean to you?
Well, I'm not that old, Matt. Solidly mid-career. Early mid-career. The experience was incredibly meaningful to me. It is, in fact, probably the reason I'm a planetary scientist today. The thrill of being able to go into work in the morning and know that when you opened up those images, when the downlink came in, that you were one of the first human beings seeing this new vista on another planet, and you did not know what those images would hold, was just extraordinary. I went off after the rovers. I had a master's degree lined up. I did environmental policy and management, but I could not get my thoughts off of Mars. I could not get my thoughts out of that exploration, that joy of discovery, and that joy of also working with a team of people equally devoted to facing the unknown, searching, and doing what it takes to get the job done on another planet. It was incredibly exciting and invigorating, and I wanted more of that. And that's why I'm a planetary scientist who works on missions today.
I hope you know that when I say senior, I only mean in terms of influence.
Gravitas.
I like that.
I understand.
What's your review of the film?
I think it's an incredible communication of that connection between human and robot. And it's not just robots we send to other planets. It's an extension of us. This is our spirit on another planet, our exploration, and really ourselves. And it's a testament to how significant these rovers were in the lives of so many people, but also in the arc of space exploration. How we explore planets was really profoundly influenced by the success of Spirit and Opportunity.
And that arc continues.
It continues with the Curiosity and Perseverance rovers on the surface today. It continues with Mars sample return. It continues with plans to send rovers and mobile explorers to other planets in the solar system. So the dream goes on.
Thank you, Bethany.
Always a pleasure, Matt.
Planetary scientist Bethany Ellman of Caltech is the president of the Planetary Society. I can't resist sharing a few more seconds from that screening of Goodnight Oppie. Here are some of the youngest people who joined us that night. What school are you from?
Thomas Thurr King Middle School.
How'd you like the movie?
It was really good.
Did you start to feel like that those robots were people?
Yeah, definitely.
How did it make you feel about all those people? They did so much work to make those robots, to get them to Mars and to do that work. Does that look like a job some of you might want?
Probably not, but I think it's a very inspiring job to have.
Yeah. Definitely. So you don't have to work on them to like them.
Yeah, totally.
Glad you enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Students at a special screening of Goodnight Oppie, the new excellent documentary about Mars exploration rover Opportunity and the heroic team that enabled it to explore the Red Planet for over 9 years. As usual, there's more waiting for you at planetary.org/radio and in the podcast. This week, that means a long, revealing, and uplifting conversation with astrophysicist and 5-time astronaut John Grunsfeld. John also served as NASA's chief scientist and later the associate administrator of the agency's Science Mission Directorate. A quick break now before I return with Bruce Betts and What's Up. This is Planetary Radio.
Greetings, Bill Nye here with a message of gratitude. It's been a wonderful year for the Planetary Society, made possible by our donors and members. Thank you so much. We look forward to achieving even more in 2023. I hope all of you will be with us as we strive to know the cosmos and our place within it. Check us out at planetary.org. That's where you can also learn how to become part of this journey. Here's wishing you a joyous holiday season and the happiest of New Year's.
There's so much going on in the world of space science and exploration, and we're here to share it with you. Hi, I'm Sarah, Digital Community Manager for the Planetary Society. Want more space? We've got the latest news, pretty planetary pictures, and Planetary Society publications on our social media channels. You can find the Planetary Society on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. I hope you'll like and subscribe so you never miss the next exciting update from the world of planetary science.
Time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. The chief scientist of the Planetary Society has joined us once again. Bruce Betts, hi.
Hi. It's so busy, Matt. I'm just going to leap right into it. Mars at opposition. It's finally here, Matt. It's finally here. Mars is as close as it's going to get for a while, a long while in its orbit to Earth. So Mars is super bright. And because it's at opposition, opposite side of the Earth from the sun. Yeah, I said that right. It rises around sunset in the east and sets around sunrise in the west. You also have Jupiter up high in the sky earlier in the evening, and also Saturn as well. And later this month, we'll pick up some other planets, but we'll check back with them because right now we need to talk Geminids meteor shower. Meteor shower, normally the best meteor shower of the year, measured by meteors per minute or per hour, however you want to do it. It peaks December 13th, the night of December 13th/14 through the 14th. But you've got increased activity several days before and after. During the actual peak, a gibbous moon will wash out a lot of the dimmer meteors. But still, there's enough to make it worthwhile. It often has 100 plus meteors per hour from a dark site without that pesky moon, so you can still pick up some even with poorer conditions. We move on to random space fact.
No, this week in space?
It's I'm combining them. I'm getting wild.
No wonder. Here, I thought I'd caught you in an error.
I hear you've already mentioned the 50th anniversary of Apollo 17's launch.
Indeed.
Did you see that launch, Matt?
I did. Yeah, I saw all of them. Well, not in person, but I watched all of them on TV.
I actually saw that. I was in Florida as a wee tyke and watched the launch start in the hotel room on the TV and then ran out and looked and watched it go across the sky. So
wow.
It's quite a memory. And I just, of course, keep doing the older person thing of, oh my God, it's been 50 years? But that's not my random space fact. That's just a sad comment on my mental state. Cosmic ray visual phenomenon, or light flashes. So when the astronauts went to the moon, they particularly when they got outside the magnetosphere and got into a heavier cosmic ray particle radiation environment, although they didn't know this is why it was causing it, they got flashes that they saw with their eyes closed, particularly when the cabin was dark or they'd had their eyes closed and it adjusted. And it turns out it's apparently from an interaction of cosmic rays with your eye. And it actually occurs in low Earth orbit too, but to a lesser extent with fewer things getting through. But apparently pretty much all of the Apollo astronauts who went out to the moon had this phenomenon occur.
Kind of creepy, actually, and at the same time, kind of romantic that you can enjoy the cosmos even with your eyes closed.
And ponder what's going through your head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They actually, within Apollo 16 and 17, they had one of the astronauts on each of them wore this like Darth Vader mask looking thing that had detectors
high-energy particle detectors on both sides of their head, so they try to correlate it.
Science!
Shall we move on to the trivia question and delve into the wild world of mythology?
Absolutely.
I asked you, in Greek mythology, who was the mother of Artemis and Apollo? Of course, the Apollo program went to the moon, Artemis program going to the moon. Who was their mother? How'd we do, Matt?
It never fails. When you ask a question related to Greek mythology, you know, where the answer is drawn from mythology, we get a huge response. And this was no exception to that. Let me provide the answer that came from our poet laureate, Dave Fairchild, in Kansas. Zeus's eyes would wander, and his wife did not approve. So Leto ran from Hera, and it kept her on the move. In labor for Apollo, those 9 days did not come soon. She's also mom to Artemis, a goddess of the moon.
Nice.
And correct, I hope, Leto?
Yes, Leto, indeed, the mother of Artemis and Apollo from shacking up with Zeus. very, very temporarily. Okay, no shacking up was involved. Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
They're a little shacking up, a little trickery as well, as we heard from Jade Walker, North Carolina, who said, finally, my BA in classics comes in handy. Jade reminded us that Leto's Roman name was Leda, adding, I guess Zeus already had a bad rap as the ladies' man because he had to turn into a swan to seduce her.
Man, they had some weird stuff.
yeah, they were pretty kinky up there on Olympus.
Thank you, classics major.
Here's our winner, and he is a past winner. It's Mike Reitmeier. Mike won. Well, he points it out here. He says, I keep forgetting to answer these in the hopes of getting one of those cool rubber asteroids, but the chance to win a paper model of the GMT got me here just in time. Also, happy retirement, Matt. If you keep track, I won once in 2017. Well, Mike, you have won yourself one of those built-it-yourself models of the giant Magellan telescope that we talked about a couple of weeks ago when I visited the Mirror Lab at the University of Arizona. So, Mike, who's in the state of Washington, thanks for sticking with us, Mike, and congratulations.
How about we go to a new question? How long, and this is in time, so hours and minutes, how long was the longest EVA extravehicular activity that was carried out on the moon by Apollo astronauts? Go to planetary.org/radio contest. Get us your entry by
Wednesday, December 14 at 8 a.m. Pacific time. And just because of tradition's sake, and because by that time I will only have, by the time we award this, I will only have 2 shows left. We'll be in the midst of my second to last show, my penultimate planetary radio episode. We're going to give the winner a Planetary Society kick asteroid, rubber asteroid.
Are you going to sign it, Matt?
I guess we could both sign it. There's room.
With the word penultimate?
I think we're done, too.
All right, everybody. Go out there, look up the night sky, and think about the penultimate thing that you thought of. Thank you, and good night.
He's the chief scientist, Bruce Betts, who is the penultimate participant in Planetary Radio every week as we do What's Up. Thank you. Join me next week as I welcome back Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Engineer Rob Manning and Andy Weir, the author of The Martian and Project Hail Mary. Our topic, how creativity and humor enable mighty things. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and it's made possible by our members who know a good opportunity when they see one. Mark Hilverda and Ray Paletta are our associate producers. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Ad Astra.